Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of You Missed It. I'm your host, Jack, and once again, I have Rylan, Zach, Andrew, and Alex as, guests, victims, or fellow watchers. Not sure what to call you guys anymore. Anyways, if you guys want to hear us talk about other movies out there, other underrated movies, you can find us on SoundCloud at You Missed It Podcast, on iTunes at You Missed It, on Twitter, YMI_podcast, and you can also find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Please like and share and follow us. You know, don't you like hearing us rambling? You do. You know you do. Anyways, so was my pick today. And today I picked the 1965 slapstick comedy epic musical romance, just a shit ton of
everything.
Everything. Yeah. This was everything the movie. The Great Race. Released by
What it's called.
Yeah, it's called The Great Race. Okay. You actually finally figured out what it was called.
Know. No, dude, I didn't know what the name of the movie was.
It said so on the, if you watched the movie instead
of
making...
I missed that card, so it never brought it up ever again. So
that's true. They didn't really name drop it, no. Yeah, it's not one of those, like, you know, it was like, Professor Fate. It should have been, That should have been the title of the movie. Yeah.
Or, Max!
No, you're doing it too low. You're doing it like Professor Fate. You're not doing it like the other guy.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that. Anyways, this is the Great Race, released by Warner Brothers in 1965. It was directed by Blake Edwards and written by Arthur Ross. And the film stars Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, Natalie Wood, and Peter Falk. Based loosely off of the 1908 New York to Paris race, two competing daredevils, the Great Leslie, played by Tony Curtis, and the evil Professor Fate, played by Jack Lemmon, race around the world. I can't read my own writing anymore. Race around the world in their state-of-the-art, gadget-filled automobiles. Also on the track is the determined suffragette journalist Maggie Dubois, played by Natalie Wood. Made on a budget of $12 million, which at the time made it the highest, most expensive comedy film made at the time. Mm-hmm. With inflation, that would have been like $80 million.
Yeah, so, probably.
Yeah. The film went on to gross over $25 million. However, when it was released, many considered it to be a critical flop. Mm. Many critics claimed that this film was Blake Edwards' first failure after previous films such as Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Pink Panther, and A Shot in the Dark. Today, the film has a 74% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and a 7.3 rating on IMDb. The film was nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Cinematography, Best Sound Mixing, Best Editing, Best Original Song, the one with the sing-along.
Oh, yeah.
And it won for Best Sound Editing.
Oh, cool.
The film is also well known for being a big inspiration for the Hanna-Barbera cartoon Wacky Races. And it also has a bunch of callbacks and actually lifts some sound effects directly out of old Looney Tunes cartoons. Mm. Actually, the sound editor was the sound editor for all the Looney Tunes cartoons.
Oh, cool.
This was a Warner Brothers movie, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's just my little brief intro for the movie. This is my third time seeing this movie, and... Yeah, I discovered it a couple of years ago while I was going through just a bunch of these old epic comedies. I was introduced to It's a Mad World prior to this movie, and then just, you know, going through all these big epic comedies that seemed to be released around the mid-60s or something like that, this kind of popped up. And I just watched it one day, and I really dug it. I thought it was just a good old, silly, epic slapstick comedy that... Honestly, because of Jack Lemmon and Peter Falk and all that, it's a lot of fun. It's one of those movies you can kind of watch with your family, you know, just get a big gathering around and just watch. Just, you don't really have to pay attention too much because it's not about the plot. It's just about seeing pratfalls, being impressed with the physical comedy. The jokes are, for the most part, hit. And Jack Lemmon, to me, is just, he's the reason to see this movie. He is a riot playing two characters at certain times, too. And, Peter Falk is also great, and Tony Curtis and Natalie Wood also do a good job as well. So, yeah, no, overall, like, this being the third time I've seen it, I still think it's a pretty solid movie. I was the only one to have seen this prior to today, so I'm very curious to see what everyone else thinks. I will start to my left with Rylan. Do tell.
All right. This is my first time seeing this film. I'd seen a couple clips before, namely the pie fight at the end, but which is about as out of context as it sounds. So I really don't need to elaborate. But it's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, it's cool. This is a Warner Bros. Movie, and it's funny that you mentioned the parallels to Looney Tunes as well, because the whole thing really does just feel like one giant cartoon. It's obviously it's live action, but in terms of the scope, the colors, the exaggerated characters, the slapstick, and the extreme situations that you find these characters in, it's definitely very cartoon and has some of the scope and scale of an animated film going on. In that sense, it does kind of have some of the not necessarily drawbacks, I would say, because it's not really that type of movie. Like, it's lacking the any like character nuance or any real sense of suspense or stakes, because everybody's made of rubber in this movie and invincible to everything. So I mean, it doesn't have those elements, but that's not what this type of movie is supposed to be about. It's just something that. You just want to sit back and watch what happens, not because you particularly feel any personal, maybe not like personal investment or any real sense of like suspense or anything, but you just want to see what happens next because you know it's going to be good. And yeah, this movie delivers like a million laughs. And like you said, Jack Lemmon and Peter Falk are just hysterical.
A pox on you.
Yeah. This is definitely something all ages can get something out of, and a good group movie as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yeah, I think I would have gotten more out of it watching with you guys than I would have like just by myself. Probably would have kind of maybe drifted off, but it's definitely something to sit down with family or friends and have a good laugh together.
Yeah, the first two times I watched the movie was by myself, and the first time I was sick and I had like nothing to do, and I just remembered I had it on my computer, and I was like, I'll just watch it, and it improved my day, like, as I was feeling like crap, and then just it's one of those ones that you're just chuckling, have a grin on your face throughout the whole movie because it just doesn't stop. In terms of like, even when it gets a little slower or gets a little bit more serious, they still throw one outrageous, hilarious joke. Like, for example, there's a sword fighting scene, and the one guy is like, he's going to make a dashing escape, and then he just falls right through his boat. It's like that stuff really works.
Just the setup and kind of the anti payoff.
Yeah,
it's good, and yeah, and you see this movie is filled with like stock like character cutouts and cliches. Like you have the dashing, charming hero who wears all white and has no real flaws and like perfect teeth with CGI glints and stuff, and then you have the scheming, finger steepling villain with the mustache twirling villain with the top hat and the all black. And just all of the stock cliches like that, but at the same time, this just so much happens along the story that despite all of its cliches, you still don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, I definitely consider like this movie to be like kind of like the last gasp or like last like kick in the can from the old school Hollywood system, because like 2-3 years later, that's when like the new Hollywood started to come in, you know, with Easy Rider and what was that bank robbery movie again? Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I knew the actor's names, but not the movie. Like those came around in
Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, because this like made Technicolor. It screams old fashioned. Like, I think what helps keep it from being really outdated is that by the 60s they could do these big epic special effects more convincingly. And like you can see in the movie, like some of the stuff you see, you're like, damn, they wouldn't do that today, or like they would CGI all of this shit. So it kind of makes it that much more impressive when you see like certain pratfalls of like planes like flying through buildings and all that shit. Like, it's really cool. Anyway, Zach, you hadn't seen this movie either. Ooh. You went into this cold. So.
Cold, as cold as ice.
How do you
cold
feel? How do you feel now? You feel a little warm?
I feel a little great.
Ooh.
I think it's really good, and it's kind of neat because I felt that there's like a lot that's very classic about it, like you said, and what Rylan was saying, that there's a lot of like, you know, I guess stereotypical things and tropes that you see in other movies, like with the villains and things. But I thought there was a lot that was like kind of ahead of its time too, like just a few different things, just the way that they did jokes and things like that. I just thought it was, I guess, really smart. Like, it played against your expectations, which is kind of cool to see a movie that old do stuff like the guy falling on the boat and things like that. And just different jokes I thought were just really well done. Different gags are played out really well. And just different characters and stuff, like the leading lady, I guess Natalie Wood's the actress name.
Yeah.
You know, just like the whole like women's rights thing and mm-hmm. that being pushed throughout the movie and stuff too. Although not like super seriously or anything like that. It's still within the movie and it's confined constraints and
things. It's definitely used more as a character-based joke
than anything. But it was mm-hmm. still kind of
but
neat,
it's kind of but kind of rightfully so in the sense of this character, because right. she's just incredibly fucking annoying.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly.
Well, that's the whole point. Like, everyone, every character is like an extreme version of like who they're supposed to be, like, you know, the over-the-top villain, the dashing hero,
yeah.
the
exactly.
extremely outspoken like woman in like in the during the Suffragette era and all mm-hmm. that, and then like the bimbling idiot partner and all that, and
yeah.
then like the complete drunk like prince and all that. So
yeah,
it's a huge satire. So it's taking anything too seriously, you kind of this
you're
is
missing
not,
the point.
It's not the,
yeah.
this is not the
yeah.
movie. To
well,
do
well,
that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I just thought like in terms of this movie, I thought there was some really big laughs. Like there's consistent laughs throughout the movie, and again, it kind of keeps it going and going and going for as long as the movie is. This movie, by the way, is like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that includes an intermission, but the intermission wasn't as long as I expected. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, like I was telling Alex, I was just gonna take a poop on my butt.
Yeah,
but you know, and that takes some time.
I'm glad that you felt our listening audience needed to be aware of.
I think I thought they should have been aware. You know,
yeah,
just getting into the mindset.
Yeah,
here
but for that way, they can at least, you know, imagine what it's like to actually sit through a movie with us.
Right,
they'll know this is probably when Zach will have to take a shit.
Yeah,
you know,
well, or just poop on my butt. Jeff.
Yeah,
not
poop
just,
on your
not
butt,
just taking
yeah.
a shit.
That's true.
Specific.
I'm going to extract that sound clip of you saying that, and whenever you text me, that's going to be the sound that comes up.
Poop on my butt.
Mark it.
Yeah.
This is when I should have brought my fart machine. Damn yeah. it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm God surprised damn. You missed an opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a one-time thing.
Yeah, oh, well. You're losing your step, man.
Oh, well.
Too many,
oh, well.
Too many Andrew puns.
There you go. Yeah, I've been too prioritized with Andrew.
Yeah.
Making hit jokes. Hit puns with Andrew.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but in terms of the movie, it's just, yeah, it's one of those, like, and I'm kind of a sucker for it, too, of movies that are just, like, you know, like
silly.
A big race or just, well, I was silly, but I wasn't going there. I was talking more just the structure of just like, oh, they're going, it's this race. It's a road movie,
mm-hmm.
I guess
race.
I should say. Yeah.
Yeah,
like I like Rat Race a lot. And, you know, even like serious ones like Wages of Fear. I was thinking of that
oh,
the
yeah.
whole time. That's like the serious version of this
yeah.
almost. Great movie too, but this is great in a different way. It's, you know, just very funny and consistently funny. And at the beginning, I wasn't sure because I was just like, oh, it's going to be like these silly gags and
mm-hmm.
this is the movie, right? And it was to a degree, but I thought it got better. Like I thought you got more into the characters
yeah.
as it went on and what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of, you know, one big laugh after another and you really kind of got into it pretty quickly.
Yeah, once the race starts, that's kind of like when things start to like settle down in terms of like we have a focus now. Like
yeah.
there's a plot. Like
yeah,
okay, now
bit.
The rest of the movie is like just getting from A
yeah,
to B.
Yeah, the first
yeah.
little bit is just setting up really the dynamic between
mm-hmm.
or the rivalry between
yeah.
Wesley and Fate.
Introducing all the main characters, you know what they do, and so that when the race starts, you already know exactly what could happen.
Yeah,
Professor Fate's going to do everything he can to sabotage the great Leslie. And you know Leslie is gonna always succeed,
and
you know.
And from what you've seen as the audience is you kind of already have a pretty good idea that that's pretty much what the outcome's gonna be, but you have no idea how it's gonna play out.
Yeah, and I think that draws into like what you were saying earlier about the suspense a little bit. You're like, because you're wondering like, oh, probably Leslie's gonna win, but you don't know, and you know, I won't spoil too much of the movie, but. Yeah, no, it does play, as you were saying, Zach,
mm-hmm.
against your expectations
yeah.
with certain jokes and certain, I guess, twists and turns you didn't really expect. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I like it when they actually have to work together.
Yeah.
Like on the iceberg and then
the
even
blanket.
The blanket and the polar bear and then them escaping the castle and all
yeah.
that. Like all that stuff is interesting, like seeing like these different personalities like at times like being apart and then clashing them together and seeing how they work off each other. Like we were commenting how the Peter Falk character was a lot more efficient when he was with Leslie than he was with Professor Fate. And we're like, oh, now he's all of a sudden doing this. It's like, well, it's because he's...
Yeah, it makes sense.
He's a follower. Yeah. You know, whoever is a good leader, and he'll follow suit.
Yeah, so. he's just used to following someone who's fucking stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So
therefore, he's really stupid, right? Mm-hmm. But you change that up, and, you know, he becomes a little more smarter, a little more easier to get around, and can do things a little more competent.
Yeah.
But I mean, the only negative I would say, and it's an obvious one, is it's a fucking long movie. But that's hardly a takeaway, because honestly, most movies that length don't make up all its time. It's very rare you get a movie that's like, you know, almost 3 hours that's like, oh, it earned every minute. Like, it's rare, right? So,
Well, I mean, I'm sure it could have been like trimmed at parts, but I feel it still moved pretty quickly. It did. For how long
it is impressive still.
How much happened in it. Like, I wasn't bored. I'm like, oh God, we still have like 40 minutes left to go in this.
It wasn't that slow. There were just kind of like moments where it's like, okay, like a little bit, but nothing big. Yeah. Bumps in the road, if you will.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with like of the time, you know, like slower. Or editing, longer takes and all that.
Yeah, probably.
And also just because of how big the movie is, these epic movies tend to be longer, especially with like an intermission and all that. Like, that's why they had intermissions back in the day, because movies like used to be almost like 3 hours, like for
typically
a time.
Longer.
Yeah, the big epics, they always would put an intermission, and it was just like, you know, going to a theater, it was part of the custom. And then by the 70s, intermissions were like gone.
Unless you watch Monty Python, holy grail.
And that's the best intermission in movie history, is in Monty Python.
Yeah. Yeah.
I dare someone to fight me on that.
Yeah.
Don't at me. Anyways, I don't know. People say that.
Actually, no, at me. We need the publicity.
Yeah, it's like,
don't at me, like me personally. At our show, though.
At his address.
No.
Yeah, the mailbox. Get the mailbox going.
I'm regretting everything now. Anyways.
You're so close to getting away.
I know. One episode where you don't mention my house.
Never.
Anyways, Andrew, what did you think of this old movie?
Yeah, it's super old. Jesus. I mean, I thought I wasn't going to be able to handle it. I wasn't far off, like, the Prestige, a campy version of the Prestige.
No.
I wasn't that far off.
Uncanny.
Once you said that, I'm like, damn, that's actually dead on.
Yeah, like, I just got that vibe right away. I'm like, they're competing.
That's not
but it's like super campy.
Yeah, we also
and
we
they're
had
like
we had
daredevils instead of magicians. And I was like, oh, this is kind of like the Prestige.
And we did have clones. We had doppelgangers, too.
That's right.
So.
You did. Yeah. Well, yeah, for some reason in that scene, I got this, like, Man in the Iron Mask moment where I was like, it was that Leo movie. With Leo?
I never saw that.
Oh, you never did?
No.
Oh, they, like, literally swap. It's what happened there, pretty much, but serious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a lot more serious.
Isn't it just, like, a take on, like, the Prince and the Pauper or something like that?
No,
I don't know what that is, but...
That is where, like, they have, like, a poor, like, peasant king, and they switch.
They're, like, brothers or something, twin brothers.
Man in the
Iron
Mask
and one gets hidden away.
Yeah. And I can't remember if it's a sequel to Three Musketeers or like, a spiritual
sequel
to Three Musketeers or not, but I think,
like,
it's related.
It's somehow related. I forgot.
I
just saw
it,
the movie on TV, man.
Although
I wasn't, like way into it, but
it's a prequel to Iron Man is what it is.
Yeah, there you go.
It's medieval Iron Man.
yeah
but I
post French Revolution Iron Man.
That I'd pay tickets for right there.
That's right, predates it's the first MCU movie, to be honest. So it was kind of in that way kind of where it went where I thought it would go. I was like, oh, this is gonna be real. At first I started to like pick things out that I'm like, oh, this is weird, or but then I just fell into what they were doing, like the world that they were building, the rules that they were setting up, and that there aren't really any rules, that you could kind of just do whatever's funny. And it worked consistently, like has already been said. It's the pacing was fun, it was good. Like, I went through the entire movie without ever feeling bored or that it was dragging, which is good for me. Like, if it went the two hours 40 and I didn't really notice that it was 2 hours 40, maybe I noticed that it was long, but not that I didn't feel its runtime. So to me, that's a success. And it made me laugh throughout the whole thing. So I mean, the physical comedy was really good, and you don't see that as much anymore.
No,
it's mostly in the writing now. People try to make you laugh with the jokes that they write, which you know, if you're gonna do that for a whole movie, it has to be like a South Park style thing where you're just constantly trying jokes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not it's, a bunch aren't gonna hit and then one's gonna hit, and it's good. That's how you keep people laughing. But nowadays it's like they think that every joke is so funny, and that's why comedies drag. But physical comedy is usually like pretty consistently funny, especially if you like if you mix it in with your writing, with the jokes that you're writing, it usually pays off, because if one thing's not funny, then the other's funny, right? Even in this movie, for instance, like maybe not all the jokes were that funny. Sometimes they make a joke and it wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be laughing as much, but then they'd follow it up with this like funny, you know, this like this funny bit of physical comedy where like somebody would fall a certain way or it'd be something unexpected that made me laugh, right? So they constantly had me wondering where it was gonna go.
Yeah.
So
and just like going off what you were saying, just like the little tiny like little comedy moments, like just adding the right sound effect or just the right look, like that's to me like a dying art.
Yes.
In comedy films nowadays, it's too much on like just getting somebody who's good at improvising, put them in front of a camera and just go.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of like,
and
you
taking
know,
the best take or whatever.
Yeah, that's sort of like, you know, the like the frat pack type of way of making movies, like Will Ferrell and Owen Wilson,
well,
know, Paul Rudd, the
Rogan.
Rogan, sorry,
if you have the right people, that does work.
Oh,
right?
It works.
Like Will Ferrell's movies do work because of that, I think.
That's one type of movie.
Funny.
I mean,
I feel like with that method, it'd be harder to create timeless humor as well. It's gonna come
more.
I don't know. Elf is a timeless classic, so
But we can name certain ones, but then like Will Ferrell is the one who has succeeded for the most part. But then there are just
there's guys
so many that are just crap, and unfortunately, like, you know, it's like most like we talk about like movies like nowadays that aren't doing like say gangbusters at the box office, or ones that are like now kind of coming back. And I feel like, you know, we've discussed that horror films have been on the rise,
yeah,
like, especially in the US, and they're like being like good box office, you know, successes. You know, Get Out,
they're more creative,
not, you know, the same shit we've seen all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like comedy could have a potential to take over that mantle as well.
Right. I feel like lately
it's starting to come up this
year.
Yeah,
because I was going to say, like, what I've noticed lately with comedy is that they've been kind of figuring out what you need. Like, so the missing element to me has been the characters have never been that relatable or fun. Like, it's all about the jokes. It's all about the jokes, and they fall flat because you don't care about who's delivering them.
Yeah.
But now they've really been nailing it with the casts and even the unknowns that they're casting, or the lesser known people that they're casting. Like, they're creating these great group dynamics. So like an example I can think of is like Girls Trip recently. I saw that group meshes together so well, and you just love the movie works because of them, right? And then I just saw Blockers, and that worked because the kids were actually really funny. But typically, you know, whoever you put as the high school kids, they're never funny. So I think that they're really that's what's changing now lately. Like, especially in the last year, at least.
Yeah, and definitely, like, the one thing that I've watched a few videos of, like, discussing how, like, we talk about, like, you know, the dialogue jokes, and also there's physical comedy, but also visual comedy, using the camera to create jokes through editing, through composition, through framing, or anything like that. That, I feel like, also has taken a big dip also in the last few years as well.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at this movie... there's so many like great like tableau looking shots, or just like you hold it onto this like angle. Like, I love this stuff, like the big pie fight and how Leslie doesn't get hit for like
the whole
time, and he just stands there as there's just all this stuff happening. Not a word is spoken, but it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And even when he does get hit, it's a white cream pie. He doesn't
get
it.
Yeah.
He's got no fuchsia, purple, yellow stains.
Yeah. No, they can only afford one sweater. they put too much money into pies.
No, like, he's got an entire freaking wardrobe. Like, he's got as many outfit changes as Natalie Wood does, except they're just all white.
I heard that the director, because they went over budget constantly throughout this movie, and a way to keep getting money, the director just brought Natalie Wood with her. So that to the executives to say, can you give us more money, because they won't say no to her,
right?
So I was like, that's kind of funny. But yeah, it just ballooned to like this huge like budgeted comedy, because I think like even the highest grossing movie at the time, like in the 60s, was like, oh god,
By that time?
By that time, it was like, I think like Ben-Hur or something like that.
I was going to say, yeah, that makes sense.
Or no, sorry. No, no, it was Cleopatra.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and that was like $40 million.
Yeah.
So just give you an idea of like just the time, like inflation. It's a bitch. Anyways, Alex, what did you think of this movie? How did you like, how do you think, what do you think?
Oh my God. I'm getting old. Like a half hour into this movie, I was thinking I got to lie down because it was really loud. It was really energetic. There was a lot going on.
Mm.
And I was like, guys, can we just stop for a minute? But it's a great film to watch with people, and I wouldn't have seen it any other way. I mean, mm-hmm. the four of you, this is how I wanted to see this film. Mm-hmm. I knew next to nothing about it. I saw it on Blake Edwards' IMDb page.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably about it. Didn't have any interest in anything before Skin Deep at the time.
Right.
Yeah, that great condom scene from Skin Deep. That's all I'm going to say about this. But this film, I did feel the 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I think some of the scenes, the sword fighting scene, for example, I think it dragged on too long. However, I understand that you can't be too high energy all the time because you're going to wear the audience down too quickly, the viewer. So the intermission makes sense. It's the movie is a big, grand epic. You can hear it in the beginning with the music and you just know you're in for something huge.
Yeah.
And especially with a title like The Great Race. I would love to have seen a trailer for this film just to get an idea of how exciting it was back then. Because the last film we did, which was Hitchcock, when it's near the end of the film and the you see the audience in the theater and Hitchcock's outside the theater and he hears them reacting to the shower scene and he's dancing around it. It's like a symphony for him.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine putting yourself in the theater for The Great Race at that particular time. It'd be so much fun, I think.
Yeah.
Because things were simpler back then in terms of comedy and in terms of entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something like this, I can identify with it. The humor is a bit dated, some of it. Not as dated as the Philadelphia Story. Sorry.
No, that's fair.
Well, we are talking, they're 25 years apart.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So things change over time. And, oh man, this is a film that I'm glad I didn't bring my SJW goggles for. Yeah. Is that feminist stuff, man?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I was thinking that at first, but then, like, I was looking at it, I was like, what the fuck are they doing? is this feminist stereotype? And then I was like, oh, wait, this is all ridiculous.
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous.
Everything's over the top.
Yeah. It's over the top. It's like, oh, this is, okay, forget about it.
I did that.
Forget about all rules or all seriousness. I don't give a
shit. Yeah. No, that did go through my head when I was picking this movie. I was like, I'm wondering how this is going to fly.
Like for the first maybe like 30 minutes, I was like, especially with that, her character, like
her introduction.
Yeah, and the way she kept like harping on it. And I was like, man, what are they, like, they're clearly making fun of it, but why? You know, it just seems kind of dismissive, right? And then I realized, no, they're just kind of, the whole world is like silly that way in the same way. So I can let it go.
Yeah. No, like they weren't like taking a stand. They were just sort of just making
this whole world is cartoons. Everybody's a cartoon.
It didn't seem, okay. So here's the thing. It didn't seem like a cartoon where they were trying to make fun of something that was serious. Like they were making fun of something that's serious, but they weren't doing it in a
insulting way.
Yeah.
Degrading.
It's not like an offensive cartoon from like the Walt Disney era or something where it's like, this is just wrong.
Poor
you know?
Taste. Yeah.
Or in poor taste. It's like, it didn't have that air to it.
Yeah.
To me.
There was nothing that really made me like feel uncomfortable. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like in Philadelphia Story, there were some lines that the crazy uncle would say. You're just like, ooh.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That don't fly today.
He would be on a list or two today.
Oh, God. Oh, two.
The great list.
The great spacey
list. The list.
Oh, boy.
Is life.
Oh, I was gonna mention Schindler's List, but I just backed off. But man, I just went on that list.
Hey, I just said a line. I didn't say anything else about it, man. Come on.
Everybody knows the Schindler's List, Jack.
No, you don't know that.
I think most people
now
do.
People do. Spoil it, Zach.
Like
come
the
on.
Two people who haven't seen it. Yeah. They're like under five.
Anyways, continue.
You need a break?
No. Well, maybe.
You need an intermission?
Like I said, I'm getting old. I got to lie down. I want to know what Jack Lemmon did before every take. Because for Dumb and Dumber 2, whenever Jeff Daniels would do a take, right before, he would be like, he would shake his head, and then all of a sudden he'd be in that spaced out look that Harry has, and then go. So I wonder what Jack Lemmon did. Was he snorting coke? Was he getting Blake Edwards to slap him around or what? Because he was yelling a lot. And Peter Falk as well. So I think when you see Peter Falk in Columbo and he's like, you understand.
Because
he was just wore down after this.
Or when he's reading his story, Princess Bride, to, you know, Fred Savage and all that. He's just
his
like,
voice is just so worn out. Yeah, like, you know, for ideas.
I've seen some shit. I was in a race once.
There were two lines that Jack Lemmon said that I really want to have for myself. One of them is, "You rise, you shine."
Yes.
I want to make that my alarm tone when I wake up in the morning, just over and over and over again. The other one was when they were on the iceberg. He said this line to Peter Falk, and I want to bring this back. It's a good insult. Thimble-headed gherkin. No idea what it means, but I think it should make a comeback. And Texas Jack. His first line, Fiddly D. Brilliant.
It's great.
Love it.
And just shooting all the guns in the air too constantly.
Yeah.
That scene is great. I also just loved like when they're fighting and the main character, he's the way he's fighting people eventually, he's not punching people, he's just like diving at them. And he keeps doing it. Like that subtle comedy like that I really liked.
Yeah.
And even
when he get punched, he would dive into a table. Like I remember like he dived to one table, stand up, get punched again, dives into the table next.
Yeah. And that was the other thing too. Yeah, people would get hit and it wouldn't look as hard, but then they would fall tables. Terribly.
Yeah. Like everybody was diving into tables until there were none left.
Yeah.
Or like the random stuff, like they're running away from like Native Americans and also like, they were just a welcoming party dressed up just to the just moving on.
Yeah, just unexpected stuff. Like that was the thing. The timing was just really good and not normal, like in a good way, right? That's what I loved about this movie was it was just unexpected quite a bit, you know?
It is sadly something that is missing in today's comedy. Just like comedy movies. It's too much about just getting the one-liners or the sick joke or the sick burn or just like something gross.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
You can make it work, but it's overdone.
Oh, and I think it has been overdone. Yeah. It's been overdone since like the year 2000, honestly. Yeah. Like, since like American Pie onward. We've seen sort of like the same comedy film in terms of how it's made, in terms of like editing, in terms of pacing, in terms of just like story structure. They're predictable.
Yeah.
You're just wondering, like, what's the joke?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, the timeless comedy films, like the one I keep going back to the most, and thank you, Zach, for this one, is, like, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Well,
like, that is one of the most rewatchable films ever.
Yeah.
And, like, the jokes never get old just because they're not dated in their own sense and also when it was made. It's still timeless. And that's what I think, as you were saying, that physical and visual humor can remain like timeless more so than say lines or jokes of the day because some jokes can be dated.
If your jokes are like focused on cell phone usage or emoji usage or something, then it's like obviously it's going to be dated in
you're dating
a couple years even as things change so rapidly or what people find funny changes, right?
Yeah.
So that's definitely a symptom of that. I think that it's like, so something like Monty Python, like the Holy Grail, is it's helped by the fact that like the whole thing's kind of set in a historical setting, right? I think if you pick your setting right, or you're doing something that's supposed to be like in the past or something, it's going to age a little bit better, just because you're not trying to be current all the time.
No, it looks so old. It's always going to be
so
old.
Then so then it'll fit because you're aware of what you're doing and the time period you're making fun of, or where you're setting it. You kind of like, especially if you're doing something in the past, then it's already going to be dated by setting, but in terms of the comedy, it should always be funny.
Well, the other thing is too, just, I mean, again, to, you know, go on Monty Python and the Holy Grail that we've just jumped in that alley on. But that movie specifically, like that type of thing, the reason that works big time too is it plays on a couple different planes. I mean, it's very silly that a lot of people can just grab onto, but it's also very witty too. Like there's something very smart about it. And that's like a lot of British humor in general. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like that's what helps it rise above a lot of others. Is just you have so many different things to grab onto. And
they don't insult the audience intelligence, you know?
No.
And that's the thing about this type of movie as well. It's like, it's not, again, we keep saying it's a very silly movie, but it's not like, this is so dumb, I don't want to watch it anymore.
Sure.
Like, or you roll your eyes back like, oh my God, this is so like, you're like, it's like you're watching like your old high school movies. You're just embarrassed.
Yeah. There's a difference between cringe and like, oh, this is silly fun.
Yeah. And like every time I watch it, like even like just Jack Lemmon just screaming and just laughing is funny, is hilarious. And and that's a lot of things about making a good comedy, is just casting the right people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when it comes to like comedians, like there's comedians who tell jokes, and then there's comedians who tell jokes in a funny way.
Yeah.
So like they just add an extra level. Like they can just say the word "what," and just how they deliver it is hilarious.
Sure.
You know, like Mitch Hedberg is a prime comedian example who his delivery is his, like, if I were to say his comedy, it would fall flat.
Oh, of course.
But when he says it, it is the brilliant, funniest shit you've ever heard. And to me, every cast member in this movie kind of is like, if you took one out, the whole thing wouldn't work.
Comedy's always been about delivery, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's always about the way you've presented it. Because a lot of these, you think of the best comedies you've ever seen, or... you know, I guess Monty, well, the Holy Grail would be one of those.
Yeah.
But you think of those jokes just written down.
Oh, yeah.
Without the delivery or how they were presented, they're not funny. They're not objectively funny. It takes that delivery or how you decided to present those jokes, right?
Yeah.
So this, like in that way, this movie succeeded just because the delivery was really good. I thought that... like Jack Lemmon's character, he was always just kind of, it's slight like twitches and the way that you delay maybe delivering a line or something, or put more punch into a certain word as opposed to another, right? So like his drunk character, just the way he would always laugh at like 11, you know, like that was a choice, right? That was a choice that he's like, oh, when I laugh, it's going to be you know, it's going to be consistently high pitched, and I'm never going to break, I'm never going to go up down, it's just going to be like, ah, like all the way up at this, like this very unique laugh, right?
Yeah.
And just tiny things like that, or just the little sounds he'll make and things like that. And I don't know, it's just this movie had all the actors were kind of on point, I gotta say, like, in terms of delivery, just
I love the going off with the laugh. I love the part where they're like they're gonna switch Professor Fate with the prince, and the guy's teaching Professor Fate how to laugh. Like,
oh yeah,
his other character, like, no, a little bit more soprano, just a little higher pitch. I was like, this is great. Just like little, as you're saying, little things like that just go a long way. Or even just like the when he's like, the jig is up, and just slowly raises his head and leaves, and they're just like, what are you doing?
And just like shuffling,
the guy's just shuffling behind him.
Yeah, and then just like the movie was also really heavily advertised as having like the greatest pie fight scene in movie history. Which
it's a great pie scene.
I can't think of
a demand that you didn't know you had.
Yeah, right. Like, I think maybe like the infamous deleted scene from Doctor Strangelove maybe could have top this scene, but
well, there's also Blazing Saddles, but that was later.
Oh yeah,
that one's actually pretty amazing.
That was 10 years later too.
It was, yeah. To be fair, it saw this movie and went, "All right, let's go."
Mel Brooks like, "I can do it better." Probably did. That movie is well more liked. So,
and then whoever made Around the World in 80 Days also saw this and said, "I could do better," except they didn't.
The Jackie Chan one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh boy,
I've seen that.
Have you?
Yeah, Arnold's in it.
I watched it as a kid.
He plays like a. Oh God, like an African king or something.
Oh, he does. Yeah, he's got like a harem and shit.
Yeah, he's got like this weird like Moana like rock hair.
He's got like crimped like shoulder-length hair. It's weird.
Wasn't the original movie up for like
it won Best Picture?
I was one.
It's considered the worst Best Picture. I was gonna say
that there was some fact about it like that.
Yeah, the one made in the 50s or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who made that. I don't know anything about that.
I don't know anything about it either. I just know they go around the world in apparently that many days.
Well, it's been, yeah.
Have you read the book? Based on a much better novel.
I don't know shit about it, man. I know there's a hot air balloon.
That's about it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know that.
Yeah. I used to have like all these old like collection novels of famous stories like Wizard of Oz, Treasure Island, and the one we were just talking about.
Martyrs.
Oh, yeah.
Classic books.
What? Inside? Yeah. What? A Serbian? What?
Serbian film.
Huh? Inside.
Serbian just, film, the
can
book.
Can we strike that?
Pop-up book.
Can we strike that from ever being able to be brought up again?
No.
Like, from
actually, I have a story about this. actually, somebody recently did ask me, hey, if there was a movie you wouldn't recommend me watching, what would you, like, that you've seen? What was like, just like.
Necromantic?
No, I went Serbian film.
Oh.
I was like. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, don't watch Serbian film. Yeah, you will.
There's things to get out of that movie.
I don't think you get anything.
There is. I disagree with that.
For us who could at least handle that shit one time, then maybe. But for like, hi mom, you want to watch a movie?
Well, okay. Well, that was a whole different thing. Different. Like to general public, yeah. But if you're down to get in the blood and the guts, you're down to get in the dirt and the shit, well, guess what? You saddle up and you get some Serbian film. You know, get the pop-up book
or
after
go
that.
Go for Salo if you want something a little more subtlety.
Hey.
Well, Salo is a really smart movie.
Just an extreme movie, but it does have its merits.
Yeah, it's actually
like I could at least recognize.
Well, yeah, no, it is a little bit more. It's more like politically motivated, and a Serbian film claims to be too. But so can anything that extreme.
Yeah.
But
honestly, once they've got your attention, they can say their message is whatever they want.
It's about ass.
Alex reminded me, but if I should mention that there was one noticeable cop in this movie.
Oh yeah. Yes, Andrew, let's get the smart dumb cop ratio.
Yes. Oh, there we go. Andrew's
cop watch.
This should be a section of the show. This should be a segment. Andrew's cop watch.
Andrew's cop out or cop time
out.
Cop
out.
I like that.
We'll have a siren go off and be like, "What's that?"
Or we'll play, or we'll just drop a random line from Kevin Smith's Cop Out.
Oh no!
So you're gonna modify your fart machine to have a siren in it?
Yeah.
It's time.
I won't be able to get it all the way to a siren, so just be a mix of the two.
And then just get a cap of like Tracy McGuire. Nope.
Yeah. No. Hell no. No.
You finished?
So yeah, that cop, he gets my stamp of approval just because he made the right choice. He's in the West, so that's a lawless place. You cannot police the West. Yeah. Any cop would know that. Okay? Yeah. He came to what is essentially the biggest bar fight that I think I've ever seen, like a massive bar fight, and decided that as a cop, he is public enemy number one and is going to be targeted. So decided to, since all they had were badges and not uniforms, so essentially gave his uniform/badge to a random person and got out of there. And that is the smartest thing he could have done in that situation.
Yeah.
So... good job.
Exactly. If your own personal safety is compromised, you can't help anyone, right? So you got to get all the cones good.
Exactly. You're not helping anybody anyway. You're just adding to the body count. Yep.
One big dose of fuck it.
Exactly.
And also, if I didn't see it, it didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I got to live to deal with this tomorrow. So, yeah, good job. Good job. Gets my approval. Gets my stamp.
Yeah. Yeah, probably the only like part of the movie which just seemed like to me like I would have cut, because it's a little forced, in my opinion, just to kind of get that best song Oscar.
Oh yeah,
that did come right the fuck out of nowhere. Yeah,
and just like I feel like
considering we already had a full length song sequence earlier, which was that was much better.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was fun. Yeah, because
that other one was like a story. It was like it was like a full on story. You were listening. You were engaged with it.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind of funny though. Like I know that was probably not the intention, but I just thought it was like random and crazy to do that. And I was like, that's kind of funny.
Yeah,
with the subtitles, I think it might have been intentionally funny because that was unnecessary.
But if it was at the time too, though. I mean, it was a little after.
Yeah,
but the other
song didn't have the subtitles.
No, like the subtitle was there just to add a joke to that song.
I think
there's nothing funny about that song.
Exactly.
Because I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, it is just basically that's something you would hear on the radio. That's the that's the promotional song. That's their My Heart Will Go On, you know?
Yeah.
yeah, and that did drag, I agree.
Yeah, that's the only part where I'm just like, because it just, like, it's before, like, 10 minutes before the movie's over, too. And it's just after this big, epic, like, escape and all, it also stops for a song. And then the two like bitch and moan for a little bit about their, you know, conflicting ideals leading to the end and all that.
Yeah.
So it was really, like you didn't really need it. Like you could have played that during the end credits or something. Like they had the time, they had the space. They were reusing certain tracks. They could have inserted it somewhere. So, but yeah, no, I love just hearing like all the like old. Like, did you guys, like, recognize any of, like, the famous sound effects or anything like that? Like, that kind of trigger? Like, when you were saying, like, is this, like, a Roadrunner Run cartoon?
I did feel like that.
And I was like, that's actually
dropping bombs, like, from, like, Zeppelins, Zeppelins. It was just so, like, that's silly.
I want
a
pedal-powered flying machine.
Right,
It was very, like, Roadrunner-esque kind of silliness, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, it stuck to that the whole way, though, I think. So that's kind of why, again, I was okay with, like, you know, some of the, you know, things they were making fun of.
Mm-hmm.
And all those old cartoons would use classical music as their backdrop as well. And this movie was no exception either. I loved the just, like, the brassy big band kind of room-pa-pa arrangements that they had. Mm-hmm. It made it feel big. Yeah. It made kept the momentum going. It was fun.
Yeah, no, there's definitely, like, one piece of music, which is like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, like that, like, when they're, like, driving through Paris near the end. Like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I actually like that one.
One is completely from Looney Tunes. Like, I've heard that quite a bit. And then,
well, honestly, the whole movie felt like a live action.
It
cartoon,
did.
Yeah.
So, it stuck to that.
Mm-hmm. Which I think was good. And it almost like a tribute, because actually the Looney Tunes cartoons, like, from what we remember, had ended 3 years prior to that.
Oh, right.
Like the last official, like, when they did like 60 cartoons a year or something like
that.
Sure.
Yeah.
It stopped. They closed their studio in the 60s. So it was almost maybe like in tribute for that. And also one thing that none of us have mentioned yet, because I think I've never seen Laurel and Hardy, so they mentioned
that
it's
not the tribute
that this is for them and all that, so I figured like there's probably so many like, you know, I guess I've never seen Laurel and Hardy, so I really can't say whether or not they like made tribute to them or like certain things or callbacks to like famous sketches or anything like that. So
yeah,
anything like that, I really don't know. One thing I mentioned, and I was just curious, has anyone ever watched Wacky Races?
No.
The old cartoon?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, wow, I'm the only one who watched that, too.
I'm only familiar with it because South Park made a reference to it.
That's
that
true, they
time.
Did, yeah. No, the Wacky Races.
In the Uber episode, right?
Yeah, in the Uber episode, yeah. No, it was that was funny. The Wacky Races, does anyone, like, know about it, like, at all?
Nope.
Like,
are there Wacky Racers?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much just, like, this old, like, Hanna-Barbera cartoon, like, in terms of, like, Flintstone Jetson-esque type animation made in the 60s. And all it was just these, exactly like these over-the-top cars. They all do these big gadgets and all these things. And there's, like, eight different caricatures. There's the evil, like, guy who never wins, you know, like Professor Fate. And he has a sidekick who's a dog. Who does that? He's known for like doing that sound effect. There's a woman as well. I forget, like Miss Pitspot or Pitstop or something like that. And she has like the Pussy Wagon movie or something like that. Something like that. I don't know. But it went on for like 90 episodes and all that.
Oh wow!
So in the 60s, that's pretty large actually.
Yeah.
Actually, even today, most animated shows don't go that long.
Nope.
Like
you, Dragon Ball Z
or Simpsons.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that's better. Yeah.
Or South Park.
Or Pokemon.
Or One Piece.
No, you lose.
No One Piece.
No One Piece.
Detective Conan or Case Closed.
Or Naruto. Like, I mean, like you could pick a lot of anime and make that case.
But... Oh, with anime. Oh, sorry, with anime.
Yeah, like, exactly. One Piece has like, I don't even know how many episodes. It's like almost 1,000, isn't it?
I would believe it. Yeah. There's the manga has been going for ridiculously
long.
Show's
been since 99.
Yeah, there's probably, I don't know if it's 1,000. It might be like 700, 800. Though.
I think it's like 800.
Well, Pokemon's like,
the manga's probably up like, to be, like beyond 1,000.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, like Pokemon was like over like 600 episodes, and Simpsons are over that too, actually, now.
Yeah.
But Simpsons been on for like since like 89.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And then Pokemon was came in like 97, I think.
Something like that.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around then.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, I had seen Wacky Races growing up, actually. Like, I used to watch that with my sisters all the time. And it's, like, you watch it now, it's trash. It's just, like, why would you ever watch this nowadays? Mm-hmm. But when you do, like, compare it with this movie, you can just see so many, like, especially with the Professor Fay character. And, like, I can't remember the bad guy's name off the top of my head in the show. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, twisty mustache, big hat, same car, you know, just doing all these things, trying to sabotage everybody, but it just backfires on them. That was the I guess the lasting legacy from this movie.
I mean, there was a lot of like some like crazy racing cartoon shows, also to a degree Speed Racer as well. That's one too that's like really crazy. And
that was wasn't that an anime first though?
It was like like that show and everything was really weird. But that one again was a little later. It was later than that, but not by a whole lot, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sure when Speed Racer. I've only seen the movie.
I want to say it was like late 60s or something. I feel like 68 or something sticks out to me, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Hmm.
But that one's another one where it's like the characters are really exaggerated and it's like a race and all that stuff. But it's different too at the same time. I do get that.
Yeah. And this was also like the first, I don't want to say it was the first team up of Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon since, Some Like It Hot.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But those two did a couple movies together as well. Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of Tony Curtis, his movies, like, really.
Not really.
I'm having a hard time trying to remember his movies. But I think this is probably the only one I've really seen of his. And I've seen Jack Lemmon in a lot of stuff.
Well, yeah.
He's, like, one of the most famous actors,
yeah.
Period. And Peter Falk, like, we've seen him in a bunch of stuff. Yeah. And Natalie Wood, I haven't seen her a lot of stuff either, but I more know her for the tragedy with her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because that story never goes away, unfortunately. That's one of, like, most, like, consistent Hollywood, like, infamous Hollywood legends.
Oh, yeah.
With her and all that, so. But, yeah, no, we're getting close to the end, near the episode, so actually I figure, like, might as well just get some final thoughts.
You want
to
wrap up?
Let's wrap it up.
Let's race to the finish.
No, we're just gonna start all over again at the end of the movie and just do the whole episode again.
We're gonna do the remake.
We're gonna do the return trip.
We're gonna do this my way. Yeah. My way. I win my way. I hate you. Yeah.
That bit fucking killed me.
Oh, when they do it all over again?
Where it's like Paris to New York. I was like, fuck. That's funny.
But that's so great for his character that that's the one thing, like, none of them break they don't break their discipline of who their characters are. Like,
no.
It's so fitting that he wouldn't accept, like, just winning.
Yeah, because he didn't really win.
Yeah, it wasn't an honorable win. Yeah.
Yeah, or not honorable
not
win.
Honorable,
he wanted to win
was...
his way, where, like, he had the power.
Yeah, his methods, his intentions were hardly honorable.
But... Yeah, it was more out of spite.
Well, yeah.
And pure ego.
Yeah, because he knows that he still won in a way by letting him win. Right?
Yeah.
And he hates that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I just love that never changes. They never become friends at the end. Like, nope, they're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
And that's great. Like, we don't.
Well, in the cartoon style too, right? It's just that we end it to start again.
Yeah, tune in next week.
Yeah, so it's it was totally fitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like the endless chase trope kind of.
Yeah. Very Roadrunner. That's basically what that was.
Pretty much.
Technically on Earth there is no finish line, so
you
know. So you can keep going.
Honestly, that was probably the right decision.
Yeah. No, and I just love, like, just the ending too. You just, like, with I push the button, Max.
Oh, yeah.
Max. I like how you bust up his garage twice. Yeah. The exact same scenario with the dogs, and they're all running around and shit. Like that moment when pure, like all the moments where just pure chaos is happening, and they're all just running around, screaming, and just trying to get away or trying to, like, just trying to get out of the situation they're in is just always was hilarious. Just killed. So yeah, so we'll get some final thoughts. I will start to my right with Mr. Alex.
I would definitely recommend this film to people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's underrated?
I think for the age that it is, 53 years ago, being a comedy, yeah, I will go with underrated. And like I said, I would recommend it to people, but I'm not going to recommend it to just anybody, because if you try and recommend this film to someone who's 20-something and they're an SJW and they're into mumble rap and anything that's completely modern at this point in time, I don't think they'll sit for the humor, and I don't think they'll sit for the runtime. Because this is an older show. It appeals to an older audience.
I'm sitting right here, Alex.
And you're going to wait your turn.
Like a good boy.
You watch your mouth, young man. Like it's a different period in time. It's got, I don't want to say a certain type of humor, but the humor back then is different than today. So I don't think absolutely anyone would love this movie.
The humor back then was not concerned about stepping on toes.
That's true. And the subject matter, and like you were saying, Zach, it takes everything over the top.
Yes.
And that's fine. I like that. The equality for women thing, I think they went over the top with that, but I think it was for a reason, because it brought the two characters together in the end.
That was the
idea.
So
I think that's where they were going with it.
It's all about extreme personalities clashing and then being forced to work together. So I feel like it works.
Like it's always like a good like moral lesson of like, yeah, you can have your extreme opinions on things, but as long as you can come together and find a compromise and find common ground, that's ultimately what's important, because then society can move forward.
Exactly.
Instead of being in a stalemate and constantly bitching at each other, which gets you nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But which we've seen with certain topics time and time again.
Correct.
Yeah.
Some people just don't learn, and they just prefer to bitch.
Exactly. Like I was saying, if I had the goggles, I would have just pulled that out, and I would have gone and gone and gone with it. I should have written it down, because there were some things I'm like, ooh, that wouldn't fly today.
Yeah.
But I'm giving into the entertainment. So that's why I liked the movie. I laughed as loud as I did.
Yeah.
And as many times as they had jokes, I was with it. But like I said, 2 hours and 40 minutes, they could have cut it down a little bit in some scenes, but fine. You've got to go on that roller coaster of the ups and downs, because you're going to, like I said, you're going to wear the audience down if you're up all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, good film, good pick.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate the kindness, man. All right. I just to kind of go off what you were saying as well. If this was edited, if we were to re-edit, it'd probably be about 20 minutes shorter, just in terms of pacing, you know, certain like certain things you can cut out. Like I mentioned, like the sing-along and the song at the end is like, I don't think that was necessary. It felt like more like padding, but yeah, like if it was made today, if you had like exact same footage, and just in terms of how we edit films today, in terms of what a modern audience is expecting, they want something a little quicker, a little bit, you know, four second average shot lengths, you know, instead of this film was probably like 10 second average shot lengths, you know, just little things like that would condense the movie. But like we were saying, like there's so much in this movie that at times it's like, I know you felt differently, but at times like the runtime didn't feel as long.
Yeah.
Cause there, at least there was something going on all the time. Cause it, like I said, was never boring. Not, and it always kept your attention. But yeah, I agree with you. I see like, you know, certain people would get a kick out of this movie, and I don't think some would, just because it's not an edgy, in your face, you know, oh my God, did you see that? Type of like a comedy that just like, you have to see this. This is insane. Like something out of Jackass or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But gotcha. Yeah. Mr. Andrew, final thoughts. Do you think this is underrated?
Yeah. I mean, considering that I haven't, like I hadn't heard about it, and if it's as old, you know, considering where when it came out, and I hadn't ever heard about it at all, that does to me mean that it's underrated, because it should have at least been on the radar, considering that it was funny and it was good. It was a really good comedy. So if I can laugh at it today, then it should have that, at least enough of a timeless quality that it should have been on my radar, or at least somebody should have mentioned it. Mm-hmm. The fact that I've never even heard about it means that it's been buried in the past, or at least that's what I think. So I would agree with that. I think Alex underestimates 20 somethings a little bit.
greatly.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't think most 20 somethings are that self-serious that they need to pick everything apart. I think that you can still let yourself go to ridiculousness. I would point to the internet to prove, as my proof, that young people definitely let themselves go into just ridiculous, silly worlds and get lost in them. Just because there are, like, just look at some of the most ridiculous, like, YouTube videos or
Wally World,
or yeah, it's just ridiculous shit where you let yourself go into, you know, this madness, right? There's shit that you'll show. Well, I think you'll show similar style of different, like, a different kind of silliness, but still silly nonetheless. Show that to a senior now, and they will hate it. They will fucking hate it, because that's like the whole elders react thing. You show them, they're all crusty and not like
crusty. Back in my day, God damn it.
Honestly, they're just like, well, crusty in personality. I don't know about
crusty.
Not in their pants, right?
No, yeah, I don't know about that. But like, you'll see those kind of like comments. For some of them are you know, kind of younger at heart, right? But like, I think. No, younger people don't always need that edgy comedy. I think that if you earn the laughs, if you really earn the laughs, that's what people are looking for, regardless of age. So I think that this earned every laugh that I got from me. It wasn't cheap in any way. It had a good setup and follow through, and I appreciate that a lot. So I liked it quite a bit, and. It is, I think, not as dated as some of what you guys have said. I think it actually works today just as well as it did back then for a lot of the jokes. Maybe some of the stuff, like, yeah, I could pick a couple things here or there, but I was impressed with how much of that runtime just works. Would have worked, well, it obviously worked then, and if that had come out today, honestly, it would have worked for me, like a lot of those jokes. I would say a majority. So, you know, it's like, yeah, if I'll pick out the Indian thing, or I'll pick out the woman thing, the woman's rights thing, because that's not really on the table today, or that's not something that, like, we don't talk about it that way anymore. So, yeah, like, I'll pick some things out, but otherwise, like, everything just works. The pie fight, like, do you think you couldn't make that today and people would laugh their asses off at that? Like, of course they would. You know, audiences would appreciate it.
Yeah, especially, like, with how far they go with it. Just, like,
yeah,
like, they don't just have these, like, cheap, like, little, like, cream pies. Like,
it's that follow through. Yeah. Like I said, like, they really follow through on every joke, which is why it works. It's not just like a half-assed thing.
Cake.
Yeah. Well, like, I love how that starts. And yeah, he dives into that cake.
He dives into it twice.
Jack Lemmon ends up in the cake twice. Oh, that's right. Basically, because both of his characters end up
in that cake. Holy shit! Like, I was. So that's another weird thing. I was just staring at that cake.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what the fuck? That's like. It's not cardboard or anything shitty. It's like, I'm like, that's a cake.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
That's a real cake.
The amount of time it would take to make that. Like,
oh, holy fuck. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's crafted.
Yeah. I heard they had to keep some doctors on standby during the pie fight scene just in case he suffocated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
From getting all the cream on your
face. You lose all your airways.
Oh, yeah. Like, and also just go, because you saw sometimes, like, they would spit out, like, a good handful of
aspirating whipped cream.
Yeah, just like.
Well, I almost suffocated when I was younger due to bubble gum.
So, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know how that was fixed? My brother just popped the hole in my mouth, and I could breathe again.
Say, like, wouldn't you just pop a hole in it?
Yeah, I chewed 100 pieces, and then and it blew up, and went, oh, and I was panicking, and I was like, oh no, what do I do? And then, bam, and I was like, ooh.
And he just went, like,
I watched my brother, and he goes,
like, now that's physical comedy right there.
That works.
That's set up and follow through right there.
It was all my hair, like, everything. It took forever. Like, I think I had to cut some of the hair off and stuff. It was crazy. Yeah.
That's good. It's
too bad they didn't fall like when Lisa got, like, in The Simpsons got gum in her hair.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, Marge's like, oh, peanut butter will work. Stays on there. Oh, maybe honey will work.
Yeah,
it just keeps going on and on and on. And then other neighbors like, well, maybe we can try this. And Cleve's like, well, maybe we can try tobacco or something. I don't know. Like, it gets worse and worse until they cut it off.
Just shave her head, yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, I like the new haircut. It's great. She walks outside for 1 second. Puts on a hood. Just walks away. Any final things, Andrew?
I liked it a lot. Thanks for showing it. Because, it was surprising. It was surprising. I didn't expect it. Good job.
Thank you.
Good choice.
Good. Mr. Odell.
Yes.
Speak.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, one other thing. One other thing.
All right.
It was fantastic in a group. Like, I forgot to mention I loved watching it with all of you guys.
I definitely liked it way more than, it's definitely one of those group movies where, like, even like we're like at some points, like you're talking over the movie or something like that, but it's not one of those movies where you have to like constantly shut up and like pay attention to it.
Yeah.
No.
Because, like, you'll just turn away, and then when you turn back, you don't miss a beat, and all of a sudden, like, 5 seconds later, you're laughing your ass off because of a joke.
It adds to it, because laughter is contagious and everything. Yeah. And all the stuff that you guys are finding funny, you're adding to it. It's such a group experience, right? Yeah. A good comedy is a group experience.
Well, that's why, like, I think, like, I'm going to go on a little bit of a movie theaters rant, is that that's where I feel like comedies, if they can come back and be great, there's nothing better than sitting with a packed theater.
Get a draw of people.
Yeah, like, I've had the experience where, like I watched the movie Ted.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it was with you, Zach, and I think you too, Andrew. And maybe you as well. I can't remember.
I don't think I was there on your first viewing.
Okay, but the first time we were there, it was one of the best audiences. They were howling, and I was with the movie. Everyone was on board. It was great. And then the second time I watched it with a different audience. Same packed house, but much quieter. Mm-hmm. And it made a completely different experience. Yeah. It totally changed the movie. Like, certain jokes didn't hit as hard. And I was like, but that was funny.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it,
it doesn't even need to be a packed house. It's just the people you're with.
It's
like,
just need a responsive crowd.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw Blockers just yesterday.
Yeah.
And there were only maybe like 20, like 30 people in the movie.
Oh,
in the theater. It wasn't that packed.
That's shocking. It's
no, I
movie.
Think everybody's going to see Ready Player One right now. But because the theaters are busy, but then not those movies. So there were like maybe like 20, 30 people in the theater, but everybody was engaging with it. Everybody was laughing at the same kind of stuff, and you were kind of bouncing off the crowd. Like those 20 people.
Yeah.
And it just worked because of that for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's who you watch comedies with, for sure.
Well, that's why I love the Rio and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
well, and like community theaters and stuff.
Yeah, well, because that crowd, though, too, especially if you go to their midnight screenings, like if you go to those shows, and that's why I love especially the midnight screenings, let alone the regular screenings, too, is that, yeah, that crowd that goes there is like that type of crowd. Like, if it was a really solid comedy that everybody can get into, it's just crazy, crazy good. Or if it's like a really good action film, like I remember seeing The Warriors there, and before I'd seen The Warriors a couple times, and it's a good movie. Oh yeah, and I'm bringing that movie back. Yeah. Too bad I don't have my glasses this time. Oh wait, look.
Yeah.
Warriors. Anyways, fuck that. But
you did that last time.
Yeah, that one was out of nowhere though. But the Rio, again, going back to the Warriors screening, it was a really good crowd. Like, there's nothing like it. I mean, seeing a really good crowd, it just heightens your experience, and it made that movie way better than I remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's just great, like, to see it with a packed house, or not a packed house, as Andrew said, but just people who are kind of on the same wavelength, who are into the movie and engaged.
Yeah, that's why I feel like the theatrical experience will never truly die, because I've even been like reading reports now that Generation Z is already getting bored of the internet, you know, just being on, like,
I can see.
And it makes sense, because, like, the thing, the drawback about, you know, watching movies alone on your phone all the time is that you do lose a little bit of that audience, you know, participation. And that's the one thing that comedies and also horror films, I think, do really well. They are great at drawing an audience in, because you just want to see that big horror film, and you want, and you love just... When a horror movie works, like, and you're with a great audience, like when I saw The Conjuring 2 a couple of years ago, and the crowd were in, you can just feel the energy and the like how tense everyone is, and just like you hear little parts of them, like you hear some of the chorus squirming, and it's just like it just elevates the experience, and it makes you scared too, because you're kind of with it, and I'm like, even I start like, I don't want to look. But I know the movie.
And when I saw that, there was like 20 people in the theater, and we saw it like as a matinee.
Yeah.
And it was like fucking terrifying. And it was, I mean, to be fair, like that goes with the craft of the movie and all that too.
That too,
it's just a really good movie. But just the crowd and stuff and just the reactions and all that stuff is really solid.
Let's say like horror and comedy are the ones, the genres that benefit most from the
They evoke the most reactions typically. Like, you know, you get both ends of the spectrum, right?
Well, it's the most appropriate genre films to get really a reaction out of, because any other type of movies, you usually are telling the audience to shut up.
Yeah, you're talking, like, in the middle.
Whether it's dramas or anything like that, it's hard, because laughing is like, everyone laughs, and it adds to, that's why sitcoms, they have a laugh track, because it works. You know, even if it's fake laughter, somehow when you hear a laugh track behind a certain joke, it kind of elevates it a little. You know, hey, if it works, don't fix it. So
and like you were saying, though, I think that it's kind of evolving on the internet, like you were saying, like if you look at Twitch streams or Let's Plays and why they're so popular is because people want to laugh with other people.
And reactions.
Like you would just watch the funny thing, or you would watch the thing if that's all you cared about. But clearly even the internet generation cares about the audience aspect of it, or a shared experience, because that's why Twitch is huge. That's why YouTube has so many Let's Players and so many people that engage with their audiences. Just because, you want to share with people. You want a shared experience.
And that's why, that's why I don't see like movie theaters, and even to an extent just public gathering, like events in general, like whether it's sports or, you know, music concerts or theater, anything like that. I don't think that will truly go away, because there is something about being in that group of people. Just, it adds to the atmosphere. It
provides a more immersive
experience. Like, it just, like it's like when you go to, like, say, like a Metallica show or something like that. Just, there's something about just being around like 30,000 people, also going
there for the same reason.
All there for the same reason.
Getting covered in sweat. That's
all equally going ape shit and all just loving it. It's an experience that, you know, you can only achieve at a certain time, not all the time, but only for those moments. And it elevates it. It just makes it better. It makes it more like you accomplish something, like you actually are doing something.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting around and by yourself and just listening all the time. There's something, it's more human in a sense, you know?
Well, that's I think that's an advertisement of why I like, you know, floor tickets better than seats. Because floor tickets, you feel like you're more into it and you can do what you want. Whereas you're in seats, I feel like it's a little more like watching it on TV, right? It's a little more of just that removal when you have that live experience, right? And to be fair, it is still, like, great, you know, even if you get a seat and things, but it's just way better, like, on the floor.
Catch picks and sticks.
That, too. I mean, you get that merch. Get that free merch, that free sheet.
Free swag.
But yeah. Anyways,
I figured it'd be a good time to Zacho. Overall, what did you think of the movie? Speak now.
It's cool.
Again.
It's cool.
It's cool. Would you say it's underrated?
Preach to the low.
We gotta get that younger demo, guys.
Yeah.
Under preach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lil Pump, my boy. Buys music. So The Great Race. Straight out of the gate, I would say it's underrated. And I mean, obviously I use myself in that, because I've seen a lot of movies. Like, I watch older movies and, you know, I'm into them, like, you know, things like that. And this movie I never even heard of. Like, I heard it first when you mentioned it, a couple years ago, and I never ended up watching it. It just kind of fell through. But outside of that, I've never heard of it. It's never really mentioned. It might have made a decent amount back in the day, but it hasn't, you know, through the years and years, nobody has really talked about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say it's definitely underrated. Also, I think just the big laughs you get and the consistency of the laughs and just how unexpectedly timed they are. Like, they just pop up. You don't see them coming. You can't predict it a mile away. You know, things like that. It's, yeah, it's really well done overall and better than a lot of comedies that come out. I mean, a lot of comedies that we were talking about nowadays, only until very recently, have just been kind of poor. I mean,
yeah,
the timing's out there. You've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's very predictable, whereas this one had big laughs. Like, it had me, like, rolling in my seat a little bit at different times, right? And even the little laughs and the subtle ones that you don't expect and things like that that maybe hit you a little bit later. And just, yeah, it's just the consistency of the laughs is the biggest thing of this movie. Because in terms of the movie, it's just like a point A to point B movie. It's a road movie, yeah, right? But just the detours they do and just the different things that they bring to it and the overtop characters and all that stuff is just a lot of fun. And like we'd all kind of said, it's like a live-action cartoon in a way, which is kind of awesome as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I'd mentioned, the only thing is the length. And, I mean, a lot of people will probably think that's pretty daunting unless it's like a Batman film or something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, and it won't be for everybody either. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. But at the same time, if you're into like film and you want like a good family film for everybody, you know, that everybody can sit down and watch together on like a matinee kind of thing. This is a pretty solid choice and it's safe for everybody. Everybody will like it. I'd say go see it for sure.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's definitely like after today, it's hands down like a group movie.
Absolutely.
Like, it's definitely like, yo, there's like, as you said, there's five of us here. Let's pick a movie and like, oh, this would be great. You know? Yeah. And yeah, no, obviously, like I'm very pleased how it's turned out so far.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, we'll start where we began, Rylan.
All right. Well, I mean, I can't really say much that everybody else hasn't already been said. I would also agree this is an underrated film, so I hadn't heard of it previously except through you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's an epic, over the top, absurd adventure comedy. I feel like most people who watch it are gonna get some entertainment out of it, or a lot of entertainment out of it, especially if you do watch it with the group and that got the group dynamic going. I do want to watch this again. Obviously, not right away because it is quite the long haul. But I feel like there would be a lot of little details and like little hints and nods and little camera tricks and possibly little set deck and or little prop hints and stuff that I would want to go through and see if I could catch again, because I feel like there's probably a lot of like little details that you don't see on the first view. I feel like it's one of those, because they just everybody involved is just having so much fun here. So it's definitely for me, it warrants repeat viewings for sure, and I would recommend it to just about anybody, unless you're one of those people who like here's one political joke and gets all bent out of shape.
Yeah.
No, definitely. Like, this is the third time I've watched it, so I can definitely say, yeah, it's definitely one of those movies where when you watch it, every time you watch it, you'll see something new that makes you laugh more than say the first time you saw it, or you just didn't notice it because you're too busy laughing at the previous scene.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because even like when I was watching it, like when you guys were laughing, I'm like, I already knew some of the jokes and I'm like, oh, you're missing this one line. It's so funny. Yeah. So it is like one of those, like, yeah, when you watch, like, I would like watch it, like, cause it is a long movie, like 1 to 2 years, you know, give it a good space.
You gotta give it a break. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I haven't watched this since we lived in Burnaby.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That was the last time I watched it.
Where did you move to? What current address?
where can that mail go?
It's
what that mail do?
Yeah, no, the address is 1-2 shut the fuck up, Andrew. All right. Anything final, or are you?
No, I mean, I'm as a costumer, I would like to go back and drool over all those ball gowns in that one sequence. But
the castle.
For as far as everything else goes, I think we're good.
Yeah.
How about them tires?
Oh yeah, the Bridgestones or
Firestone.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I love that. Crispy. I love that. Like, of course, Leslie's car is white, but he even has white wall tires on his car too, and they're spotless for the entire journey.
No dirt. Nothing.
Yeah, and I love, like, he's got, like, the Professor Fate's also got, like, the black smoke as well to fill everything. And then how he just labels everything with, like, his braid, with his name and the skull and everything. Yeah. It's just, like, how evil can you get?
Yeah, it just loves being evil. Relishes it.
Yeah, and I just love that part, like, when he's in, like, the meeting room and he's got, like, the fake beard.
And he pulls it off.
Just, I love that little look he gives when he realizes he's been out. He goes... And then just runs out the window and just makes a dive. You're just like, what the hell? And he's like, I'll get you. And then you just know it's going to nothing. You just like, it is like a Roadrunner cartoon where you know the joke. You know he's going to fail.
Yeah.
But you just want to see how.
Yeah.
That's the execution.
Yes, the execution,
and just seeing how they're going to fail.
Is it going to backfire here? Nope. Here? Oh, there he goes.
Yeah.
Are you going to see the joke happen on camera, or are you going to hear it off camera, like when the bomb...
That was good.
Drops.
That reminded me a lot of Roadrunner. That's a classic one. That's the thing. It goes around the corner, and the camera just sits there, and then you see the explosion.
Or even the first one with the hot air balloon, where they're running, it's coming down, and they run from the spot where they think it's going to hit them.
And then it falls right where they're standing.
This is like anything Warner Brothers, it's covered in this movie.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting because for a little behind the scenes, it was like I was picking between this and like another big epic comedy movie, which is it's a mad world. That one is a little bit more well known.
Yeah.
So that's why I went with this one first. But they're very similar in terms of like they're both like epic long chase movies in a sense.
And the tone's probably a little similar too.
Very similar, like a big epic, over the top comedy slapstick, mixed in with some outrageous different characters. And this one is the difference between this one and this Mad Men World is a big ensemble piece full of every famous comedian at the time.
Yeah,
famous even old school ones. Like I think like the Three Stooges are in it for a brief shot. You're like, whoa. So it's like if they made like a huge comedy today with like the Judd Apatow crew and the Frat Pack crew all got together and made one giant movie.
Well, it's apparently the original Rat Race, right?
It is.
Rat Race is essentially a remake of it.
So because of like this is so similar, I'm probably going to wait a little bit before we get to It's Mad World.
Makes sense.
I feel like if I were to show it as my next movie, it'd be way too similar.
It feels a little repetitive.
It would come across as maybe a little derivative.
A little like we've just seen this movie.
Yeah, because I've heard of that movie and I hear it's like people who've seen it have said it's a classic. I've also heard that it's like one of the ideal 70mm ones to see too.
I personally do like It's a Mad World a little more than It's a Great Race.
Yeah.
Just because I think it just like all like it just kind of hits certain marks a little bit more and I think it's just a little more crazier.
Okay.
And it's a little simpler too. It's just like they're all trying to get this money.
Yeah.
Under the big X.
This
win the big prize.
The Great Race came out first, right?
No, I think it's a Mad Men World came out 1 year prior.
Oh, okay.
And actually that is one.
So it's not, so this is derivative.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the things that the critics at the time were saying, like, this is like, it kind of fell under the trap that, say, Full Metal Jacket did.
Yeah.
Where it came out at the same time as other, say, great similar films.
Yeah.
In the Full Metal Jacket, that was like Platoon.
Oh, of course.
And, there was another Vietnam movie that came out.
There was a lot of Vietnam movies.
Born on the 4th of July, stuff like that.
A couple years after, I think.
Yeah, there was another one that came out like the same time as Platoon. I just can't remember what it was called.
Hill?
Maybe. Yeah.
There was too many
Vietnam movies.
But like I said, like it got criticized like, oh, we're seeing another Vietnam movie. In this case, we're seeing another pratfall slapstick comedy.
Sure.
So that a lot of people look down upon it. For that reason as well.
Oh, okay.
And also like Blake Edwards, who directed like the Pink Panther, like that came out first.
Right.
So they're comparing it to Pink Panther, which everyone knows. Everyone, you know, remembers the Pink Panther for the most part. And A Shot in the Dark is actually the sequel. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so but anyways, like I'm not choosing the next episode. Zach is.
I am, yeah.
And do you have anything in mind? Anything you want to tease us with?
I do have something. Yeah, it's gonna be the sequel to Serbian film directed by me. a Canadian film.
Is it
it's just the same movie, I just remade it in the snow.
End on a high note, man. End on a high note. You gotta be like George Costanza. Good night. I'm done. Good night.
Drop the mic.
Yeah.
Something about maple syrup. Okay, we're going.
Yeah. You don't start with the little one.
No.
Okay.
Wow, wow.
No teases for your movie?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know for sure if I'm picking it, but, you know, there might be a dog in there. You know, might be a pet movie.
A dog's purpose.
Might be, yes. You got it. Marley and Me.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
That's heavy, man.
Yeah, it is. Sad movie.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, no, it might involve a dog. You know, maybe not quite in the way you've seen before. But,
does Owen Wilson say wow in Marley and Me?
Probably.
Let's find out.
Google.
Stay tuned. We're going to watch Marley and Me throughout the rest of this episode.
Yeah.
Just sync it up at the 1 minute and 30 second mark, and we'll keep going.
Wow.
This episode's about to end. So on that note, thank you for listening. And like I said, you can find us on all the social media platforms that I mentioned in the beginning of the episode. I'm not going to repeat it. You didn't pay attention, so you fail. So I'm at Nuff. Thank you again, and until next time.
Wow.